I guess not. Hello, I'm an addict named Jim. I don't think this mic works, so you're going to hear me. All right, let's see, follow the format, huh? Can we open this meeting with the Serenity Prayer? God,
grant us serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, so if you didn't know, you know that this is the men's wrap. If you didn't know, you do now. Okay, can I get someone to read the press statement? Up here. Come on up here, man. I got control issues. Thank you.
My name is Vincent. I'm an addict. Statement to the members regarding the press. As our 11th tradition says, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. The primary purpose of our public relations effort is to tell the story of Narcotics Anonymous and what our program offers to the still suffering addict. Members of the press are sometimes attracted to our conventions and welcome their interest. However, we do not disclose our last names in the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If a member of the press approaches you, please direct them to the chair or vice chair of the convention. If any members of the media are present, we ask you to contact the chair or vice chair of the convention for information.
Yeah, someone come up and read the social media statement.
Come on down.
How you doing, man? My name is Richard. I'm an addict.
Hey, Richard.
The social media statement. The widespread use of social media networking and social media by our fellowship indicates that these forums are resources that can serve to facilitate greater communication and interaction amongst Narcotics Anonymous members. With that being said, some of our members may not want to be depicted in photos or social media platforms. Please be mindful of this and get permission from members if you intend to post their photos on any type of media, social media.
Okay, thank you. May I get the reading of the clarity statement?
John. I'm named John, for those of you that don't know. Clarity statement. At NA meetings, we introduce ourselves as addicts. When members introduce themselves as addicts and alcoholics or talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that somehow one drug is separate from the rest, requiring special recognition. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive in reference to the disease of addiction, allowing us to focus on our similarities and not our differences.
May I have a reading of who's an addict?
Recovery.
Okay.
Who's an addict? Most of us don't have to think twice about this question. We know our whole life of thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another. The getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or a woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in a grip of continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same: jails, institutions, and death.
Can we get the reading of who's in that? Why are we here?
Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is impossible.
Okay, now is the time to introduce the speaker. The first speaker that we got coming up to the podium is Teddy from Virginia.
I'm Teddy Nomadic. And I'm real grateful to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. Look, I wasn't doing jack a few minutes ago. I was sitting in there shooting the shit with the people in the bid meeting, and here he come. I need a speaker right quick. Come on. You gonna do it? And I was like, I just got up and walked behind him, you know. Cause I ain't never come in a men's rep. I ain't never wanted to come in a men's rep. Because I always told myself, they ain't talking about nothing that they can't talk about in a regular damn meeting. So everything is subject to revision. So when he said, come on, I just walked behind him and said, okay, you know, and, because this stuff that's going on with me, I've been talking about it. So I've been clean since October the 17th, 1989. I don't know how many cups of coffee it is. I don't know how many moments it is. That's my clean date. And I know that my clean date is important to me. And my clean date can be important to a newcomer. Hell, my clean date could be important to me. Because I know I don't never want to use again. If I ain't got nothing else, I know that. That I don't never want to use again. So if you got some tissues, keep them. Because I'll change my story as soon as I wipe them damn tears away. So what I've been dealing with is women. Y'all ain't got, bring your chair and put it right here. Look, you ain't got no idea. So I'm 72 years old, and ever since 1968, I've been practicing the escape. Get in, get out. Get in, get out. First girlfriend, she hooked school, I went in school. And after the do, she said, am I yours? And I said, sure. I was on my way going into service.
met somebody before I got on the plane going in the service. So when I came back from wherever I was stationed at, came back home, maybe it was coming back from Vietnam, I ain't go see her. I wouldn't have saw the girl that I met before I got on the plane to go to Vietnam. And she wasn't available. But the first girl was always available. But I wasn't never willing to be available. And that's been my life, man. Get in, get out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 at a time. Trying to service 5 at a time. Not having no consideration of how they feel. You know, in that step it talks about arrogance. It just happened to have on that day. And it says, the look on their face, that I tell myself, look at them, you done did that shit again. Because I never had no directions in life. I never had nobody to tell me. My daddy was gone when I was probably 2. He wasn't going out of my life. He just showed up, you know, the beginning of the school, go get some new school clothes so I can go to school looking like I need to be there. Thanksgiving, Christmas, Halloween, you know, all the major holidays. And whatever the item of the holidays was, I used to hate that damn Easter egg with your name on it. I ain't like that Easter egg. You know, so, you know, I was a thief. I was a thief at 3. Because I used to like to search. Like, I could have been a sniper, searching and destroy. Because I went in every drawer in the house. I knew where every dime was. I knew where all the change was, you know. And that led me down a damn path of self-destruction. So, you know, it was always, you'll figure it out. It was always get in and get out, you know. And they all took what I gave them. Whatever I dished out, I don't know what part of me they saw that they liked, that they were willing to take the stuff that I was dishing out. Because the stuff that I was dishing out was, I don't want to be here and I ain't going to be here, so I'm gone. You know, I would go in trying to figure out, I would go in with a plan on how I'm going to get out. Whatever it could be. You didn't look right today. I ain't like your cooking. I ain't like how you washed up at the bowl. That was my pet peeve. If I saw you washing up and still in the shower or in whatever, I ain't like that, I'm gone. You know, I was in a relationship one time and I'm a diabetic, so I wanted some wheat bread. I could write a book about this shit. Man. I wanted some wheat bread, so I asked the young lady to carry me to the store. So she didn't carry me to the store that I wanted to go to, because the store that she came into didn't sell no wheat bread. So when we got back in front of my house, I said, you had a nice day, because I told you I wanted some wheat bread. And had a nice day. You know, I was in 2 and 3 relationships at the same time. That's a damn job. Trying to service them was a real damn job. And I wasn't doing a good job of that, no way. I had other means to take care of them, you know. Look, in my area, we had a saying, keep your hands in your pants and leave the newcomers alone. I ain't hear that one. So the women in my area said, she lived right around the corner from you, why don't you give her a ride home? Now they said give her a ride home. They ain't say drop her off, go in, or take her home with you. And on the way home, she said, wow, look at my mama. And I saw the back of her mother going in the gas station, and I turned to her and said, I remember you. I know when you were born. I know who your daddy is. I know the whole works. So, you know, we started talking, you know. But she was worse than me. She was a flim-flam artist. It's like, how you a flim-flam or get flim-flammed? So, you know, we were doing the do, having a good time, you know. She said, I'm going to the doctor to get a checkup. I was like, good, I'm on now. To one day, she was up. I don't know how many of y'all had candy ladies in your neighborhood where you can go buy candy from them when you was a kid, but she was always at the candy ladies. It was like, how many times can you go to the candy lady in a day? I found out that the candy lady was really her ex-boyfriend that she was going back to see. And the reason I found out that was, I'm a diabetic, so I don't care. I go into the health department and get a check just to make sure that it ain't that insulin that I'm taking, and it could be something else. They called me a couple of days later, and they said, we need to talk to you, Mr. Austin. I said, why? I know I hadn't done nothing in the sense of doing something. They say, well, we really need to talk to you. I said, you can take me over the phone. They say, no, we need you to come see us. And I was like, okay, I'm on my way. So I get there, and the lady said, Mr. Austin, you know, you be practicing bad behaviors, huh? I was like, maybe. And then she told me. She said, you got gonorrhea in the throat. And I said, okay. Do what you gotta do, give it to me. They said, and we need to know who it was. And I got on the phone, and I called her, and she said, it ain't me. And I know it won't nobody else. So they told her, you know, if you don't come, we're gonna, look, in the state of Virginia, if they tell you to come to the health department and you don't come, the sheriff will come get you and bring you to the health department. So that was that. So as a result of that, and that dude that she used to go see, this is what she did to me. She worked in the hotel, in the newsstand in the hotel, and they had two phones. So I'm talking to her on one phone and say, look, we can continue this relationship, but you got to get rid of him and get his name off of the house that you're living in, because he don't live there, and you perpetrating a fraud. And she cussed me out. Look, I used to say I like women who cuss. She was one of the women that changed that theory. Because when she cussed me out, and then a few weeks later, I found out that on the other phone, now we talk about coincidence and miracles in the second step. A few weeks later, the person that she was talking to on the other phone, I was telling them about what happened, and she said, oh, you the one she cussed out. Now I was like, now that's a real coincidence. She cussing me out, and my best friend is listening to her cuss me out. It was like, okay. So, you know, my baby mama, Gemini women, I stay away from them now. After, I'm a, here goes the other part of that, that equation, is I'm a Gemini. So could you imagine all four of us up in that damn room? I think it's 10 women in my life that's Geminis. And they damn near day to day. And I still didn't catch on, you know. My wife is a Gemini. And when I met my wife, look, it was one woman in my life that I walked away from just because. I ain't had no reason to walk away from her. I ain't know, she drank some damn antifreeze behind my butt. And I couldn't go see her. Because I ain't know how to go see her. I ain't know what to do. She was the only woman in my life that would do whatever it took if she could just have me. And I walked away. So, you know, here I am 24 years ago. I'm standing outside the meeting. I'm still doing the same thing that I did in 1968. So me and my friend, we standing outside the meeting, and she walked by, and he said, "Yeah, I'm gonna tell the fellas about you. Got a nice job, got a nice house, take care of yourself." And I said, don't give nobody her number. Don't you tell nobody about her. Give her my number. And my higher power said, "Oh, you want her number? How about I give both of y'all the same number?" And I asked her to marry me. On that day, I had no idea what I was doing. Because I thought that maybe if I go this way, maybe I'll do something different. Maybe I'll just take a chance on being a good guy. I think in the third year, she was ready to get rid of me. And it wasn't because I was treacherous or anything like that. It was just that she was tired of me not being available for her. So last year, we separated. We still married. And I said, "I want a divorce." She said, "Well, I need some insurance." And I said, "Okay, I'm still going to move, and you can get the insurance, because I know the insurance has got a price on it." And we just can't live together. But it's only recently that I've been willing to change. And this is how recently that I became willing, because I was ready to change instead of waiting for that damn pain to show up, to change. Y'all know what time it is, so let's say half an hour ago. Because I see one, and immediately I forget that you ain't supposed to be talking to nobody no damn way. Ain't you married? So I saw that pain half an hour ago, and it was like, "Nah, I think I better back out now while I'm safe, because it looks like this one's going to cost me." You know, when I go to the grocery store, I have to get in one of those carts, because I can't walk from that side of the store to that side of the store. Do they going to be calling the paramedics for me because my blood sugar done dropped? That I can't go get the milk first, because if I go get the milk first, it's going to be sour by the time I check out the store. And the pain of that showed up, that you can ready to go to jail, because one of these ladies that
you be peeping at is going to catch you peeping, and you going to jail, and how you going to explain that? So I'd rather come in here and tell y'all what I've been doing than to have to explain to my wife what I've been doing. You know? And you know, like in the fourth step, you know, be honest, write it all down. Some stuff I ain't writing down. You know? I ain't writing down who I got with while I was married. Because I might not be up here talking to y'all the next time somebody asks me to share. You know. But I realized that I don't have to stay there. You know. I went in courage to change. I almost got it. You know. It was a battle. Courage to change. Remained the same. Which one gonna win out? I went in denial. I know where to go. And I know what to look up. And I know who to talk to, you know. I tell my sponsor everything. The stuff that can get me to jail, I tell him. I ain't putting it on no paper, you know, because sometimes some things are not, don't have no statute of limitation. It's like, you going to jail now, you know. So I talked about all that stuff, you know, and I talked about it in the fifth step. Most of that, all that stuff that I just told y'all is so much that's enough of that, you know. And then when I got to the sixth step, you know, that's the only damn defect that I ain't talk about. I ain't talking about lust. It's too attractive, you know. Oh, everybody go to the bathroom every day. This is what lust is for me. Okay, I'm ready for it to be removed. Flush the stool. And before it goes around the last turn, I'll reach my hand around all the way up to my damn shoulder and grab lust back out of there and keep on playing with it. You know how they talk about stuff progresses? Yeah, my lust progresses. Look, I tell people, my defects got sponsees. And they got sponsees. And they all named Les. You know? You say hi to me, I think you asking me for something. You know? Can we go? And it's like, they ain't ask you nothing. How you know they want you? Your mind is a terrible thing. You know? So even when I ask my higher power to take it away, I'll reach back in there and get it again. So when I separated from my wife, the first thing I said, well, I never lived by myself ever in life. I always had somebody in the house with me. Take care of the house, feed, cook, whatever. You know, we go somewhere, look good on your arm, all of that stuff. And I said, yeah, I'm going to go over here and live in this house by myself. I ain't going to have no company. I always lie to myself. Always lie to myself. How come I go, you know how they talk about people placing things and leaving wherever they at? How come I went back to 1970 and called her up and say, I need to talk to you. Because she was one of them ones who would say, okay. You know how I went before recovery? I go. If it's good, I go back. If it's good, I go back. If it's bad, I go back. That's how we were. She come back, I go back, we go back, we keep doing the same stuff because I don't know what it is. Maybe I asked somebody, what was it that, that's arrogance for real now. I'm going to ask them, what kept you coming back when I treated your ass so bad? You know, I might get the answer, huh? Because, you know, we saying here,
If you don't want to know the answer, don't ask the question. Because if you ask somebody in here what they think about you, you're going to be feeling real bad when they really tell you. You know? So here's the clue to the solution to what I'm getting ready to do. I go get another one. After that one, I told that one, I said, look, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. I promise you that I take whatever it is that I just did to you, but I'm sorry. I need to carry you home. She said, well, you still get benefits. It's like, that's the shit get me in trouble. Benefits. So I carried her home, went and picked up 1975. Now, this was last year I'm talking about. Went and picked up 1975, and she started, 1970 cuss worse than sailors. I know some of y'all know what that means. Cuss worse than the sailor. Shit, she cussed more than the damn United States Navy. And it was like, that stopped me from saying I like women who cuss. The next one, her escapades, she talked about all of her escapades. Her escapades were worse than mine, and I didn't want to hear it. So I carried her home. Because what I said was, I'm going to put a note on my door. The doorbell broke, please do not knock. You know, we tell ourselves the most outrageous nonsense. And that's been working here lately. I don't have the sign on the door, but most people, the only people that really know where I live at is the people who knew I lived there in my past, and they figured it out that I went back to that house. You know. But it's that lust, man. It's that lust. It's that lust to get my ass in trouble, man. I'm telling y'all. Y'all ain't got no idea. You might have some lust in your life, but I'm guaranteeing you. What's that song? I see them girls in the short dresses. Oh, yeah, you heard that, huh? And I had to turn my head. When I heard that song, and when it played out there, and I remember what it said, it was like, maybe you want to practice that song. You know? Why don't you just stop looking? Why don't you stop looking down or looking straight ahead? Why don't you look at them in their eyes and see for who they are instead of seeing what they are and what's going on with them? You know, and your conversation can be, hey, my name is Teddy, how you doing? You know, and here we hug. You know, give them a hug, you know. Because I said the other day, now, that if I tell them who I really am, they really going to know they don't want to have part of me. Now I'm in here telling y'all. Okay, I tell my higher power, you really funny. You know, I ain't had no idea when I left Virginia Thursday that I was going to be in here telling y'all about my shenanigans and how I get out of it. Because in the 10th step, look, I put them women on my 8th step list, and I did some of them men to them women. Some of them will not talk to me. Some of them say, you sure, you act like you changed. Some of them say, I recognize the change in you. But some of them say, mm-mm, I ain't messing with you. You know? So in the 10th step, it talks about my thoughts, my behavior, my fantasies. Lust and fantasies go together. They like twins. You know? The lust come, the fantasies show up, and I'm trying to figure out who is going to be the one that I do it with. So the pain got great enough that I was at TACNA, that's the Tidewater Area Convention of Narcotics Anonymous in Norfolk, Virginia, every March. The young lady walked in the door. Now I'm standing on the wall, right? She walked in the door. And I asked my sponsor, who is that? And he said, you don't need to know. Look, this is what made me realize that I'm in trouble. Because I'm standing on the wall and I see Teddy walk behind her. Now that's a damn scary proposition. I saw myself in my voice when I was talking to her. I recognized that you're doing the same stuff that you always done, and you don't know how to get out of it when you're in it. Because I had a sponsee that we used together. He got clean. Took me 2 years after he told me about Narcotics Anonymous. So he died in 2015. He had cancer. Look, we used together. I got clean. When I needed a sponsor, after the first sponsor stopped coming, he was the only person that was on my mind to sponsor me, because I could not lie to him. Because he knew everything that I had ever done since he met me in 1971, and I couldn't lie to him. Gotcha. So before he died, he called me and said, "Look, Ted, I need to work this step, the third step." And I left my house, went to, after we went to, did that third step, this is what he said to me: "You ever worked on that problem of yours?" And I was like, "No." He said, "You might want to do it." 1968, 1989, 2015, and a half an hour ago, I still ain't worked on it. Thanks for letting me share. Yeah.
All right. Let's give Teddy another round of applause. All right, our next speaker, we got, you can't hide back there, okay? I see you trying to hide, okay? Pittsburgh Zone Guarantee.
Thank you, I appreciate it. I love trying to hide. I'm an addict, my name is Gary. This is no lie. On the way out here, I was talking to my buddy from L.A., just all the way out here, and I was telling him that I was coming to this East Coast convention, and I was sharing with him how, because I knew, like, the big shots of the big shots of the big hitters of the old-timers were going to be here, and how inadequate or, like, not as good enough, and what do I say to these cats because they're so cool, conversation on the way out here. I swear to God, it was the craziest thing. And I get here, and I look around, and all yins old heads, all yins do is look old, is what yins do at this point. They all look the same and look old. I don't know, but I'm standing here, and I'm thinking to myself, like, I've got to tell you this story in a second, how this all happened. But I'm thinking, I'm sitting here in this college, it's college, and I think, I look around this room, and I think, what we learn here today in this room and in this convention, you can't teach in college. It doesn't happen out there, man. It happens right here. That's great. I look around and I see these guys from all over, and they're always at the East Coast. It's lifelong friends is what it is. That's what I got here. I got lifelong friends. Then say, just tell me, I don't make this shit up. Show me your friends and I'll show you my future. Look at this shit, man. It's right here in front of me. I ain't supposed to be here. I'm just going to say it. Listen, hold on. So I get this phone call from the gentleman, I think he's the vice chair, Nick, and he says, "Hey, you chairing? I mean, chairing at the convention?" I said, "Absolutely not." He's like, "You're not? They called you." I'm like, "No, they didn't." He's like, "You know what? There's another Gary T in Ohio." And there is, for real, legitimately, there's another Gary T in Ohio. And I'm like, "Oh, that's cool. No problem. You know, that Gary T is a really cool dude. He's going to chair, blah, blah, blah." So now Dennis, about a couple months ago, texted me and said, "Hey, when you get here, come see me." I'm like, "Listen, you just answer Dennis. It doesn't matter what he says. He can say, 'Hey, I shit on a carpet,' and you say, 'Okay, you know, good job, thank you.' You know what I mean?" So I thought he just wanted to see me when I got here, honestly. So so I see Dennis, and he's like, "You Sheraton?" I'm like, "No, that's that dude from Ohio. You know, Gary T is a good dude." He's like, "No, it's you, man." I'm like, "No, seriously, it's not me." And so anyhow, we have this big I am not supposed to be here. Okay? Seriously. This is not good. You know what I mean? And so I'm here with my peers, and I'm looking around, you know, and I got the Eddies and the Jimmies and the Phils and the Rons and all you old cats, and I'm still intimidated by you guys, man. I got to tell you, I'm still feel like I'm a newcomer when I get around you guys, and I got 33 years clean, man, and I still feel sometimes inadequate around you guys. So, but you know what? It's not you. It's me that feels that way. That's the crazy. You guys don't make me. You guys are the most loving, caring folks in the whole wide world, and I still feel a certain way. My hands sweat. You know, it's cool. These old timers, when they ask you to share, they're like, yeah, no problem. I'm like, this is no lie. I looked at the schedule, and I seen that the photo, at least I thought, is at 1:15. That's what I thought. And I must have looked at the wrong column, right? Because it said 1. So I'm like, I'm going to get to the photo because I've only been at one photo at Robert Morris. That's the only reason I got here, okay, at 1 o'clock. And so I pull up and I'm thinking it's 1:15, the photo, but I see everybody standing out there and it's 2 minutes to 1 o'clock. So I park my car, it's parked sideways out there, I swear to God. I'm running, I fell a couple times because I'm old, because I just wanted to get here for the photo. That's all I wanted. That's it, I swear to God, and I was good. I was going to glide the rest of the day. I don't even know what the topic is. I think Dennis said something about being the man. I had to share, my sponsor asked me to share, I don't know, this week, and he gave me a topic. It was a topic, and there was a few speakers up there, a few people sharing from the podium. And the topic was moment of clarity. And so I'm a smart ass. So I'm thinking on the way to the, you know, to the meeting, I'm gonna look up the word clarity, right? And it took me to another word that I didn't understand. And so I Googled that word, and it took me to another word that I didn't understand. I'm like, Jesus Christ. So finally, I just say moment of clarity and said a Jay-Z song came on. I swear to Jay-Z has a song called The Moment of Clarity. That's what I got from a moment of clarity. So anyhow, when I started reading, it talked about, it used the word understand. It kept using that word understand. And the basic text talks about, there's a line in there. It says, I would rather understand than be understood. And I thought, oh my God, that was my moment of clarity. I get a moment of clarity every time. I ain't never caught a softball in my life, ever. Some dude hit this softball. I'm thinking I'm a show off. This is the other day. I got a black eye. I swear to God. So it's softball. It hit me dead in the eye. Okay. And there was a couple people around. I tried to look cool and it hurt my eye. Still messed up. That's a moment of clarity. Okay. That's a different one. A moment of clarity. So anyhow, let me just finish that story by saying, so at the end of the meeting, I was so pissed, dude. We ran out of time, and I didn't get to share. So all the way down, Googling these words, what's this mean, blah, blah, blah. And at the end, he's like, dude, not enough time, dude, sorry. I ran out of there. I didn't even tell him that I was so pissed. And so anyhow, I'm pissed. All right, Tim? No, but you know what? It's okay. The story is for the first time in my life, at 27 years old, I put all my cards on the table for the first time in my life. I always had that euchre card in my pocket or that girl in the stable, you know. And for the first time in my life, when I walked in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I put all my cards on the table because, you know, all my life, you know, I didn't do that. And so, because I figured I owed myself at least that, is to put all my cards on the table. And when I walked in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, you told me that if I come to a meeting every day for 90 days, my life would turn around 180 degrees. And I thought, whatever. Like, you know what? I owed myself 90 days. It was 90 days. And I owed myself that. So I came to a meeting every day for 90 days. And things started to happen. And my conclusion is after being here all this time, that everything I learned how to stay here, I learned in the first 90 days of recovery. And I'm still here. Statistically, I don't think the numbers are great in Narcotics Anonymous, but in all these years, I've never seen one addict walk out that door and get high who has followed the simple suggestions that Narcotics Anonymous gave me when I walked in there. Not one. Statistically, we're not good numbers. You know, 2 out of 10, whatever the numbers are. But the numbers for me is I've not seen one person go out there and get high who's followed these simple suggestions. That's a number, okay? You can call it what you want. That's a legit number. So I put all my cards on the table is what I did for the first time. I knew not. Dennis out there told me something about being a man or some shit, you know? That's a topic is what he said. I have the, I was able to, my peers elected me not too long ago to go to a place to represent the region. And so I did. I showed up. And when I went out there, and it was at the World Service Conference, and I went out there, something changed. It changed my recovery. It changed how I looked at service. And I got to tell you, it changed my life. It changed how I look at shit. And while I was out there, I'm just going to say it. I'm in a men's thing, and this is stupid, but I probably cried at least 30 times while I was out there. You know, Narcotics Anonymous started somewhere out there. I Googled it. You know, Google's cool, and they told me there's this, where the 1953, there was this facility where Narcotics Anonymous and Jimmy K started, blah, blah, blah. So I MapQuested, and they say, ain't been a meeting there in 70 years, you know, all this happy horse shit. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go take some pictures, you know, because there's a couple old heads that did that, I know for sure, that went out there and took some pictures and so. But there ain't been a meeting out there in years and years and years. So I show up, I think it's in Van Nuys or L.A. somewhere, and it was on the corner of Claiborne and whatever. And I show up, and I get out of the car, and I have my camera in my hand, because, you know, I'm, like, taking selfies in front of, you know, flexing and shit. And this lady walks up to me. Now, there's not been a meeting there, and I can't tell you how long. She walks up to me and said, you want to read just for today? And so here I am, you know, 70 years later, sitting in a church where, you know, who knows, you know, where the old Jimmy K could have been sitting crying like a baby with it just for today reading in my hand. I got chills. Something happened to me out there that was really special. And so I'm sitting around this room with people from all over the world, and there was a lot of discussion going on. And I didn't know what to do, so what I did is I Googled the spiritual principles. And I was at a regional meeting last Saturday or whatever, and I'm not the most well-written, I'm not a professor, I'm not the most well-spoken, woo, you know, guy out there. So, listen, you know, I have some people, I can't win everyone over. I really can't. It is what it is. I'm kind of, not a dick, but I'm just like, hey, what's up? I am who I am here as I am out there. I ain't no different at work as I am in front of my kids. And so the truth is I can't win anyone over. So before I went to that meeting last Saturday, I printed out the spiritual principles of this program. And because in different situations, I have to use different spiritual principles. So I knew going to that meeting that I was going to take some heat for whatever reason. At least that's what I felt. So what I did is I printed out 10 of them. And on the way down there, I marked the ones that I thought that I was going to have to use in that room at the regional meeting. And so I set it in front. No one knew this. I'm telling you guys this. Don't tell anybody, all right? So I set this thing in front of me, this piece of paper with 10 spiritual principles in front of me, and I marked the ones that I thought that I'll need in that room that day. And as I'm sharing it, I can feel myself starting to go there in my head, like starting to try to be a dick. I would look at this piece of paper and I would reel myself in. And so I started to notice that out of these spiritual principles that I marked down and I checked off, it was love, it was unity, it was you know, coming together. It wasn't being defensive and being, you know, a lot loyal and not being a dick. It was about the love and the unity and the fellowship and coming together. And I was like, oh my God. I thought, holy shit, this shit works, you know? Because I've been here a minute, and here I am, a moment of clarity, after being here 33 years and putting that stuff down on paper again, looking at it and thinking, oh my God, yeah, this fellowship works. And it was a moment of clarity for me. And I get it all the time, man. Anyhow, I came for the photo and I came for the auction. All right. It is what it is. So anyhow, I came here at 27 years old. I'm 61. Think about that for a second. I came here at 27. I'm 61 years old, dude. I'm old and tired. And these old heads been here longer than me. And it's unbelievable that I've been here this long. And I did all them things that you guys told me to do. And this is what they said. They said, read this IP, informational pamphlet. Read this informational pamphlet. Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. Or who am I? I think it's Welcome to NA. And they said, if you want to get clean, come to an NA meeting. That's what Jim said. But they said, if you want to stay clean, you got to work the 12 steps. And that stood out for me. And they said, oh, by the way, right under that, they're like, by the way, we're going to mention the word God. I'm not afraid of that, but it did say that. So at that point, I made a decision. I walked into my home group, and in my home group, I've been in my home group for 16 years. I just left it a couple months ago. When I walked into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and they just told me I got a home group. I got a home group. At my home group, I met my sponsor. I got my first basic text. Okay, that's the first time I heard about the steps. That's the first time I heard about God. That's the first time I felt a part of. That's the first time I understood what the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous was. That was the importance of a home group, and that's a big reason why I'm here. When I walked down them, there was a dude, big old black dude. His name was Norman. He was like 200, and my feet were dangling. He cracked my back and shit, and he said, "Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous." And after the meeting, he said, "Do you have a picture of you when you were young?" And I'm like, "Probably." And he said, "Look into your eyes and look at the spirit when you were young." And he said, "That's the spirit is alive." And you know what? I thought about it and I thought, I don't have a picture of myself young and ever remember when the spirit was alive until I came in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Spirit was dead, man. And to end that story, I was 100 pounds. Kevin sent me a picture of us. I was 100 pounds when I walked in the rooms. And I gained 100 pounds since I've been here. So I'm 200 pounds. I had hair, so I lost my hair and gained 100 pounds. And this dude, I'm like twice the size of this dude now. It's the weirdest thing ever. So anyhow, just a couple more things. There was a gentleman who had more time with me. He's been in our circle for a long, long time. And he just recently passed away. And so there was a couple guys there in his room when he took his last breath. And it was the saddest situation. He died clean. And there was me, Kevin, Steve B., Ron, and Cody, and Cody's girlfriend, and the rest of his family. And this dude died clean. And I remember that we all had our hand on this dude when he died clean. It was probably one of the most spiritual things that I've ever done in Narcotics Anonymous. As sad as it was, the other side of the coin is yesterday I wanted to come, but we were at a memorial for a dude who was my age, who we walked in the rooms exactly the same time, who overdosed and died, and I was at the memorial yesterday. That's the reality. That's what the dude who died clean, that was one of the most spiritual things that I ever, ever experienced. And the other side is we die from the horrors of the deed, man, this addiction. So anyhow, hey man, I ain't got a whole bunch to say up here. I could get into the whole, I was married twice to the same woman. Talk about a moment of clarity. I should have the moment of clarity when I divorced her the first time, is what I should have did. It's a family disease, and I tell you why. I'm 60. I'll be 61 years old, and I'm raising a 3 and an 8-year-old in my house. I didn't think this was a family disease. And I'll tell you the sixth story is I have three boys, and the oldest is out there using. I didn't think I was hurting anybody but myself when I was getting it in. You know, I wasn't hurting my mom. I wasn't hurting my dad. I wasn't hurting my family. I wasn't hurting my friends. My choices as a parent, now I'm on the other side, as a parent, is to keep my oldest in, this is sick, keep my oldest in the house. Yeah. Allow him to shoot dope so when he falls out, I'm there. Or send him packing and get the phone call at 3 a.m. That's fucking crazy. That's the horrors. That's the other side. They don't say this is a family disease. It's a family disease. Shit's legit. Anyhow, I can do the picket fence. I can do the whole thing. But you know what? I got clean at 27 years old. I busted my ass. I worked hard. I went to work every day. You know, I gained friends. I got married. I did all them things. I had children. And I got stories in Narcotics Anonymous. I can write a book just like all you cats. And here, there's no, you think you got secrets, okay? My secrets are your secrets. We have the same exact secrets is what it is. I mean, trying to hold my, like I said, hold my card. The truth is you did whatever to that tree, what I did to the tree. I don't know what it was, but we did it. Somewhere, somehow in some woods, I don't know. Got involved in service early on. I got this text. Two sponsees texted me while I was here, while I was sitting back there. And I got involved in service early. And I believe that's one of the biggest reasons why I'm standing here today is because I latched on to some dudes. These dudes didn't like me, and they didn't want me around. It didn't matter. I latched on to these dudes, and all these dudes are still clean today. And the bulk of the people that I know that believe in this fellowship and stayed clean or not only was involved in service, and that's where I met them, but they're still involved in service today. And I do all them things that you guys tell me to do. One more quick story. It's too nice outside, man, and we'd be hanging in this room. It's crazy. You know, I do H&I, and you know, there's a SCI green. It's a, you know, maximum security level 5, you know. These people in there for life. They're life, and so we take an H&I meeting in there. And so there's 3,000 inmates, and the most that's ever showed up is 17. So you figure that out. I swear that was our biggest meeting, 17 people. 3,000 people in jail. And I'm thinking to myself, you mean that has nothing to do with these people being in jail? That has something to do with drugs, and only 17 people showed up. Anyhow, I remember the dude saying to me that I have a worse sentence than Charlie Manson. I'm like, what does that mean? And he said, Charlie Manson had 25 to life. He said, I have life without parole. And I thought to myself, oh my God. So I go in there, and I'm talking about, it's a stupid story, but the garbage day was on Monday for me. So, and I lived in the woods. I put my garbage out Sunday night. I come home and my garbage be everywhere. Them coons would get open the lid. They would rip. So I get this great idea. So I bungeed that thing on there, right? Monday morning, next time I go out, shit was everywhere, right? Them coons are badass. So the old lady up the road, old wise tale, she said, you get a stocking, put garlic in it, hang it off the handle. Them coons, they will not come around. Monday morning, I'm telling this story at the H&I meeting. I'm in a maximum security level 5 facility where people ain't going to get out, okay? They're not getting out. So I'm telling this story about, you know, the old lady told me, you know, put the star in the ground, and I came out and there was garbage everywhere, and they ran around the room, and this is what this dude said. He said, I miss garbage day. And I thought, and I'm fucking bitching about picking up my garbage on Monday. He said, I miss garbage day. That shit, that puts it in, I got chills. That puts it in perspective, man. Listen, if you don't give me nothing at all today, just if you can just sit still and give me your undivided attention for just 10 seconds, just sit still and give me your undivided attention for 10 seconds. Yeah, he's in there tonight. I'm Gary, I'm an actor. Right.
All right, can we get a hand for both the speakers, please? One more time. All right, may we get the reading of We Do Recover?
My name is Chuck, Great Recovering Addict. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as human beings, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on the best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time, man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to all of us. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as the Lekar Kanana.
Yeah. All right, thank you. Third step statement.
I'm Dave, I'm an addict. Third step statement. Many of us have said, take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.